Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dangerous Pleasures by Bertrice Small, narrated by Marie Hawkins. Prologue. Already the week sucked, and Monday had only begun. A call from her mother before 9 a.m. didn't bode well. Annie Miller knew better than to answer her phone when Phyllis's number popped up on the caller ID. But her mother would keep calling until she had said whatever it was she had to say this morning. Just back from dropping her youngest at nursery school, Annie reluctantly picked up the handset. "Morning, Mom," she said cheerfully, hoping to diffuse the complaints that were sure to come. "I just don't know what I'm going to do about your father," Phyllis's disapproving voice said without further ado. "What's the matter? Is Dad all right?" "He's never home," Phyllis replied. "But, Mom," Annie responded, "3 months ago, you were complaining that when he retired, he'd be underfoot all the time, and you wouldn't be able to get anything done. Why isn't he home?"
"Golf," Phyllis sighed dramatically. "Golf, golf, golf. All day long. Every day. It's all he does anymore. Plays golf. Comes home to eat dinner, watches television, and then goes to bed. It's as if I'm not here at all. And he won't even go to church on Sundays now because he has an early tea time."
"Have you spoken to him?" Annie ventured.
"I've tried," her mother answered. "He says it's his retirement and he gets to do what he wants to do. You have to speak to him, Annie Elizabeth. He listens to you."
"What do you want me to say to him, Mom? He's worked hard all his life, and it is his retirement. Besides, it's probably just a phase. When he's gotten it out of his system, you two can do something nice together. Maybe plan and take a nice trip." Her mother sniffed derisively. "Look, Mom, when the weather gets cold in a few months, he won't be able to play golf all day," Annie reasoned.
"You always take his side," Phyllis said angrily. "I'm going to call your sister. She'll understand."
And the phone went dead. Annie sighed. "Yeah, sure," she muttered to herself as she put the handset back in its cradle. "Call the corporate lawyer for sympathy." Annie picked up the full laundry basket from the kitchen counter where she had left it earlier and headed for the washer where the first load was in a final spin cycle. The phone rang again, and seeing that it was the high school, Annie wondered if she had forgotten a meeting today.
"Hello?
Mrs. Miller, it's Mrs. Long from the principal's office. I'm afraid Nathaniel is going to be sitting detention this afternoon." The principal's secretary sounded sympathetic and almost embarrassed to be delivering such news. Annie was astounded. Her oldest son, Nathaniel, and detention were two words that had never in his entire school career been spoken in the same sentence. "What on earth did he do?" Annie asked Mrs. Long. There was a short pause, and then Mrs. Long said, "He called Mr. DeReeder a damned fool." Then she lowered her voice. "Not that the entire faculty doesn't agree with Nathaniel's assessment, of course." There was a humorous lilt to her words. Annie sighed. "But Nathaniel should not have said whatever he was thinking. Please tell my son to apologize to Mr. DeReeder before school is out, and tell him to walk home. I won't be picking him up. And Mrs. Long, thanks for calling."
One more thing, Mrs. Miller," the high school secretary said apologetically. "Amy will also be sitting detention this afternoon."
"What has my daughter done?" Annie wanted to know. Amy had been so difficult of late, but then she had always been Daddy's girl. Mrs. Long couldn't refrain from giggling.
"Well, the 9th grade girls have had this dare going all spring," she began. "Some of them have been found out, and some of them have gotten away with it. Amy and another girl in her class were the last two to take the dare, and I'm afraid they got caught today."
"Caught doing what?" Annie asked nervously.
"Not wearing underpants and wearing very short skirts," Mrs. Long said.
"Oh my God," Annie exclaimed. "And this was the dare?"
"Yes," Mrs. Long answered. "Please don't be too upset, Mrs. Miller. Girls this age are prone to do silly things. It isn't that unusual. They so desperately want to be accepted. No real harm done. The school nurse gave them each a pair of new briefs to put on when they were caught."
"How were they caught?" Annie asked, wondering if she really wanted to know.
"Miss Franklin, the field hockey coach, noticed it when they were at practice."
"Tell my daughter to walk home with her brother," Annie said wearily.
"I will, Mrs. Miller,"
the high school secretary said. You have a good day. Annie sighed as she hung up. It didn't get any easier. Just after 11, the middle school called. The twins Lily and Rose had freed all the animals in the science lab because caging animals was inhumane, the middle school assistant principal told Annie. Unfortunately, several of the mice had found their way into the school's lunchroom, causing a stampede among the luncheon workers that had resulted in a sprained wrist for one of them. There would be a disciplinary hearing in the middle school principal's office Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. It was requested that Mrs. Miller attend this hearing. Until then, the twins were suspended from school, and they would be sitting detention that afternoon. Tell them to walk home, Annie said grimly, wondering what was next as she went out the door to pick up her youngest child at nursery school. William Bradford Miller, named after his maternal grandfather, was 4 years old. Known to his parents as Whoops, he was Wills to everyone else. And Wills, it seemed, had brought balloons to school today for all of his friends, his teacher Mrs. Gunderson said as she handed Annie the packet of extra-sensitive sheepskin condoms. It's not the first time this kind of thing has happened, she told Annie laughingly, attempting to ease her embarrassment. I get this kind of thing at least twice a year. I don't know how he could have possibly gotten a hold of them, Annie mumbled, wondering if she could make Whoops walk home. Where had he gotten them? Nathaniel? Oh, you know little kids. Nosy, Mrs. Gunderson chuckled. Aren't you, Wills? She ruffled his hair fondly. See you Wednesday. Lunch and nap for you, buddy, Annie said. No nap, Whoops said mutinously. Nap for both of us, kiddo, Annie told him as she strapped her son into his car seat. Yep, if today were any indication, the week was really going to suck. Chapter 1 Some days, like today, Annie Miller doubted if she could continue to do it alone until all the children were grown. But then, what choice did she have? She hadn't said anything to them, but she wondered if they remembered that 2 years ago today, their father had stepped off a curb in London and been hit by one of those big red buses. He was dead by the time he had reached the hospital, and they had called her. It amazed her that Nat, her larger-than-life husband, could have been so easily killed. Had he lived, he would have told her, and anyone else who would listen, that the bus got the worst of it. And then he would have laughed that big booming laugh of his. Annie let the tears come. She was alone, and there was no one to see her cry. God forbid that anyone thinks she couldn't handle it. She knew what they had said about her. They said she was brave, a trooper, a wonderful mother devoted to her family. They said that Nat would have been proud of her, approved of everything she was doing. No one ever saw Annie Miller cry or show any sign of weakness. That Annie Miller, she had heard a woman in church say of her. She's a strong woman. Sometimes, Annie thought wryly. Only sometimes. At other times, she wanted to run away, because it was all just too damn much for one woman to handle by herself. They had met in college. He was a senior. She was a sophomore. Their story was the all-American fullback and the cute, perky cheerleader. Nat had asked her to marry him just before he graduated, but even at 22, Nathaniel Miller was a careful man. He wanted Annie to finish her education while he got a master's degree in business and then found a good job, and they had followed his plan carefully. Annie graduated and worked for a year before they were married in 1988. Nat Jr. had been born in 1990, Amy in 1993. The twins, Rose and Lily, had been born in 1997. They had planned for 4 children and felt quite foolish when a very romantic New Year's Eve had resulted in the little boy she and Nat laughingly dubbed Whoops during Annie's surprise pregnancy. She had been born and raised in Egret Point. He had come from the city, but he loved her small town, and so they had settled there, buying an old colonial house on a dead-end street called Parkway Drive. They moved just in time to set up the nursery for Nathaniel Jr. Nat claimed not to mind the long commute into the city and back each day. At least he didn't have to drive it, which had always been a relief to Annie. He took the 6:30 a.m. bus in and a 5 o'clock bus home 5 days a week. Nat had been an account executive with a large public relations firm. He had been in London overseeing the opening of his company's new office when he had been killed. Although his death had been ruled accidental, Annie had later learned from her husband's insurance company that there had been a rash of incidences going about London, where people waiting to cross busy streets were being pushed into oncoming traffic. But if Nat had been pushed, no one came forward to say so, and no one had ever been charged. So the death was ruled accidental, and the insurance company paid on Nat's policy. Annie had been shocked to find that the insurance policy Nat had wasn't enough for everything she would have to handle in future years. Her husband's company, however, had, in a burst of generosity, paid off the mortgage on their house and turned over his retirement fund to her. With her father's help, Annie had invested almost all of it in funds that paid her an income. Her in-laws, her parents, and her sister helped out as best they could, but both sets of parents were retired now. Annie felt guilty taking anything from them. She lived frugally, which wasn't difficult for her, but the children, particularly Amy, had a hard time with the tight budget that ensued after their father's death. Nathaniel had caught on quickly and gotten an after-school job he worked full-time in the summer. He was able to buy his own clothing now and had a little pocket money for himself, for which Annie was glad. Girls, however, were a different animal. To be accepted, to be popular, girls needed fashion on the cutting edge. Amy was 14, going on 15, and right now it was all about her. Nathaniel was impatient with Amy. "You've got enough clothes," Annie heard her son saying to his sister one day. "You don't need to wear something new to school every damn morning. You might try concentrating more on your studies instead of on what some skanky little actress is wearing."
"You don't understand," Amy whined.
"What I understand," Nathaniel said, "is that Mom needs a new winter jacket. The one she's wearing she got 7 years ago. But if you nag her enough, she'll probably spend the money on you." The twins, who cared only for animals, made fun of their older sister.
"Oh, Lily, do you like my jeans? They're by Poo Poo Originals. Paris wears them all the time," Rose said one evening in a falsetto voice, dancing about the room. "Oh, Rose, do you think I'd look good in pink hair with purple stripes? Teen fashion says it's the latest trend,"
Lily had replied, fluffing her hair as she pranced around. Amy's answer to all of this was usually to burst into tears, run upstairs, and slam her bedroom door. Annie shrugged to herself as she thought about her children. She wished she could give Amy anything she wanted, but she couldn't. Thank goodness Nathaniel understood the situation, and that the twins were right now low-maintenance kids. As for Whoops, he didn't realize that almost all of his toys and most of his clothes were hand-me-downs. He was a good-natured little boy. But college was coming up for her oldest son, and Annie didn't know how they were going to make up the difference between tuition and the scholarships Nathaniel could gain. And she had no doubt he would get scholarships. But would they be enough? They would be getting letters from the acceptance offices any day now. Nathaniel had, of course, applied to several schools, including one of the state's universities. But he had applied to Princeton and Yale as well. He had done a tour last summer of Ivy League schools with several of his classmates and fallen in love with both places. Annie prayed her son would be refused or waitlisted. There just wasn't enough money for him to go to an Ivy League school, and she couldn't bear to disappoint him if he was accepted at either. "Hello, anyone home?" "In the kitchen," Annie called to her sister Lizzie. "What are you doing here, and in the middle of the day, and in the middle of a work week?" she asked her sibling. They were a year apart and had often been taken for twins in their youth. Both women were tall, although Annie was heavier now. Both had bright blue eyes and rich chestnut-colored hair. Annie's was pulled back in a horsetail and held with whatever she could find, which today was a rubber band. Lizzie's hair, however, was cut fashionably short, with a wisp of bangs swept to one side of her head. "I came to take you to lunch," Lizzie announced. "Why?" Annie wanted to know, immediately suspicious. Her younger sister was a corporate litigator with a big firm in the city. It wasn't like her to drive all the way out to Eagert Point to have lunch. Such a drive out and back would mean a day of work lost.
"Because, like you, I remember what today is, even if everyone else has forgotten," Lizzie told her older sister.
Annie burst into tears. "Oh, Lizzie, thank you," she sniffled. "Mom's picking up Wills at nursery school," Lizzie continued. "We can pick him up after lunch, okay? Go put something decent on, Annie."
Could we stop at the cemetery after lunch? Annie asked her sister.
Sure, we'll get some flowers for the grave,
Lizzie replied.
I'll only be a few minutes,
Annie said, heading for the stairs.
I know,
Lizzie muttered, resigned. It had always taken her at least 30 to 40 minutes to dress and get ready to go out. But Annie could do it in 10 minutes and look just as good. No fair, Lizzie thought. 10 minutes later, Annie descended the stairs again. She was wearing a pair of perfectly tailored pale beige cotton slacks and a white cotton sweater. There was a Navajo corn rope bracelet on her right arm and turquoise earrings clipped to her ears. A touch of blue eyeshadow, a bit of blush, and pale coral lipstick had completed her preparations.
How do you do it?
Lizzie said. You look great, as always.
It's all at least 5 years old, Annie told her sister. After Nat died, I realized I wasn't going to be able to be Talbot's best customer anymore. I take really good care of what I have. The kids need more than I do. They're growing.
Speaking of my niece, Lizzie said with a grin, there's a box in the back of the car for Amy. I forgot to bring it in, so don't let me go back to town with it.
You spoil her, Annie said, and she kissed her sister's cheek.
Thank you. I got her a couple of those little dresses that are becoming so popular with girls her age. Short, flirty, baby dollish, Lizzie told her sister. I figured with spring in full swing and the end of school in another month and a half, she could use them.
The two sisters exited the house and got into Lizzie's Porsche convertible.
Where are we going? Annie asked.
I thought the country club,
Lizzie answered. It's near.
I don't have a membership there anymore, Annie said softly.
I do, Lizzie replied as she swung the silver Porsche out of Parkway Drive and down another tree-lined street and gunned the car out onto the road that led toward the Eager Point Country Club.
Oh, shit.
What's the matter? Annie asked.
Cop car,
Lizzie said, and automatically pulled over.
I wasn't even doing the speed limit yet. These damn cops think anyone who doesn't drive an SUV, van, or sedan must be looking to drag race.
Hey, Lizzie, thought that was you,
the patrolman said as he walked up to the driver's side of the car.
Hey, Glenn, you gonna give me a ticket?
Lizzie wanted to know.
Nope, just wanted to say hello. We don't see you a whole lot around here these days. You weren't home last Christmas,
Glenn said.
Got invited to go skiing in Aspen with some clients,
Lizzie answered him.
Married yet?
Glenn drawled, smiling down at her.
No time,
Lizzie responded candidly.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Annie. Didn't see you sitting there.
Annie laughed. Glenn never saw anyone or anything when Lizzie was about.
You married yet?
Lizzie asked the policeman.
Waiting for you, honey bunch,
he told her. Lizzie colored. We've got a reservation, she said.
Enjoy your lunch,
Glenn replied and walked back to his patrol car.
He's been sweet on you since high school,
Annie said as they once again headed toward the country club.
He's a good man.
I know, Lizzie answered.
I'm just not ready.
You were 41 in February, Annie noted.
And you'll be 43 in December,
Lizzie remarked.
You're a widow with 5 kids and a modest, no, meager income. I'm a lawyer with a 7-figure income, a Porsche, and a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath co-op, all paid in full. I win.
But I've been loved and cherished while you've lived a cold corporate existence, Annie countered.
I think I win.
They were both laughing when Lizzie pulled into the country club parking lot.
Not so cold, Lizzie said. My nights can get pretty hot sometimes.
Too much information, Annie said with a grin. But I'm surprised that you would risk your reputation, when in your business, reputation is everything. There aren't too many good women litigators, sis.
Not to worry. I have the channel to satisfy my wicked desires and keep me sane. As far as the wide world knows, I'm celibate, a prime, no-nonsense attorney with a killer instinct,
Lizzie replied.
The other partners love me, she said smugly.
The club dining room was practically empty. They sat at a table overlooking the golf course. Lizzie ordered a salad plate and Annie a club sandwich. Their lunch and their iced teas came quickly. When they were alone again, Lizzie spoke.
You know, now that Nat has been gone 2 years, you ought to get the channel. It can be anything you want. It doesn't just have to be mindless and guilt-free sex.
You devote yourself to the kids, Annie, and I know from Mom that you don't have any social life outside of school events. You need something for yourself.
Basic cable is all I can afford, her sibling answered.
And it's all I can do to keep up with Dad. They keep raising their rates all the time. If I could afford something special, I'd get the Disney Channel for Whoops. And don't go offering to get it for my birthday, Annie cautioned her younger sister.
I see that look in your eye. I'm too tired to watch much television these days anyway.
If I do something for the kids, will you let me help? Lizzie asked.
Like what?
Remember Stone Ledge Lake?
Lizzie said. Our old camp in Vermont? Is it still in existence?
Annie smiled, remembering the summer she and Lizzie had spent there.
It's still there. It's better than ever. And I would love to send the girls this summer, Lizzie said.
Amy is almost too old, but she won't be 15 until the fall. And if she likes it, next year she could be a counselor in training. But the twins are the perfect age for Stone Ledge Lake. I'm going to Tuscany for a month in August. I've rented a villa that's staffed. I'm taking Mom, and I'd love to take Nathaniel as a graduation gift. If he needs to come back before we do for college, that's fine. But he's been the man of the family since he was 16. I think he could use a break, too.
Oh, Lizzie, that is so generous of you, Annie said, and she felt her eyes beginning to tear.
But it's too much, really.
Oh, pooh, I can afford it. And who else have I got to spend my money on except my nieces and nephews?
Look, I'm getting Mom off Dad's neck so he can golf to his heart's content. If the girls go to Stone Ledge Lake and Nathaniel goes to Italy with us, you are left with only one little boy to look after. It will be like a vacation for you.
She scooped up the last bit of coleslaw from her lettuce.
I don't know how Amy is going to feel about camp, Annie began. She'll hate the idea. Remember how we bitched and complained to Mom and Dad the first year we went? But Amy is at that age where you and she are going to be at sword point more often than not, Lizzie remarked. You need a little bit of a break from her, sis. Let me tell the kids of our summer plans, okay? Amy will take it better coming from me than coming from you. I told Mom I'd stay the night so I don't have to go into the city until the morning.
One kid, Annie mused. The girls will be away for 8 weeks, right?
Lizzie chuckled. 8 glorious weeks, she answered. I've got plane tickets for 3 the night of July 31st.
I'd have Nathaniel for a month before you took off, Annie said. He's got a summer job lined up, but only for a month. I thought he would need August to get ready.
She smiled almost to herself. Just me and my boys, and then a month with just one.
Lizzie, I don't know how to thank you.
The look on your face just has, her sister responded. The twins are going to be over the moon, but I know Amy had a summer of hanging out with all her friends planned, Annie said slowly. Oh, the fights we would have had. Thank you for saving me, Lizzie. Throwing caution to the wind, they ordered dessert, sharing a tartufot between them before leaving the club to drive to their parents' house. They found their mother feeding her youngest grandson ice cream. Whoops was looking extremely pleased with himself as he mongrelled down the dessert.
Thank heavens you're here, Phyllis said. Doesn't this child take a nap anymore?
She demanded to Nell, her gaze fixing itself on Annie. He does if you put him down and tell him that's it, Annie replied.
Well, I asked him if he took a nap, and he said no. I am utterly exhausted chasing after him. Take the little barbarian home.
She sagged against the counter.
Thanks, Mom, for picking him up, Annie said, giving her parent a kiss on her cheek. It was nice to be out for lunch with Lizzie.
Are you going to accept your sister's help for the summer? Phyllis wanted to know. Isn't she just the most generous woman?
I am going to accept her help, Mom, and you are 100% right. She's the best sister anyone could have.
Hey, isn't this a first? You and I agreeing on something,
Annie teased her mother.
Go home,
Phyllis said with a fond swat at her elder daughter. Then she turned to Lizzie.
I serve supper at 6 o'clock sharp. Your father likes to see the world news.
I'll be back in time, Lizzie said. I just want to see the kids and tell them our plans. I thought it might go down easier if I told them.
Yes, Phyllis agreed, especially with Amy. Amy's just like you, Mom, Lizzie said with a laugh. See you later.
As they returned to Parkway Drive, Annie said, You know, you're right. Amy is like Mom. I never realized it, but now I know why we don't get on easily.
But I'll bet Mom never went to school in a short skirt without her drawers, Lizzie said, laughing.
Did you tell her about Amy? I did not, Annie said. She would have said it was all my fault.
The twins were already home and greeted their aunt enthusiastically. Nathaniel and Amy came off the high school bus a few minutes later.
I have exciting news, Lizzie said. Come into the den and let me tell you. You found a man, are getting married, and I'm going to be your bridesmaid, Amy guessed, looking hopeful.
What do I need a man for? Lizzie demanded of her eldest niece.
No, it's even better. I am sending you, Lily, and Rose to Stone Ledge Lake Camp for Girls this summer. Remember? Your mom and I went there for 5 summers. It is such a cool place. Tennis, field hockey, soccer, riding, swimming, trips. You know, the whole camp experience. You leave June 28th.
She smiled broadly. The twins began to whoop delightedly. They flung themselves at Lizzie, thanking her, hugging her. Amy, however, was obviously confused by her good fortune.
Why are you sending us away? She asked. Is someone dying? Is that it? You don't want us to be here when they die.
Good grief, Amy, you are such a drama queen, Lizzie replied. No one is dying. I just thought it would be a cool thing for my nieces to follow in their mother's and aunt's footsteps.
You aren't sending Nathaniel to camp, Amy noted.
Nope, he's coming with me and your grandmother to Italy, Lizzie said.
Italy? Amy said.
Yep, museums, ancient ruins, history, Lizzie murmured, winking at Nathaniel.
Ew, Amy groaned. I'd rather go to camp.
That's just what I thought, Lizzie said. You see how alike we are, kiddo? Oh, there's a box in the back seat of the Porsche for you. Go get it and give us a fashion show. Rose, Lily, you and I will be going camp shopping one Saturday soon, okay?
You don't have to bribe us, Lily said.
Yeah, Rose agreed. We think camp will be great. Thanks, Aunt Lizzie.
Museums, ruins, history, Nathaniel said, grinning at his aunt. A villa in Tuscany, wine, Italian girls as ripe as the grapes, a hot little car. Lizzie murmured seductively with a twinkle.
Better, Nathaniel said. Thanks, Annie. Oh, Mom, I got accepted at State, waitlisted at Yale, and I got accepted to Princeton. I'm going to Princeton.
He looked so happy and hopeful. That's wonderful, Annie said slowly. But, Nathaniel, going to Princeton depends on the kind of aid or scholarships you get. You know that, honey. She felt terrible. She felt awful. Her beautiful son deserved to go to Princeton if that was where he wanted to go.
I'm being given an alumni scholarship, Mom, for $10,000. I have to keep my grades up, of course, but if I do, it's good for the 4 years.
Is it $10,000 for the 4 years or every year? Lizzie asked.
$10,000 a year for the 4 years, he answered her.
That's very good, Lizzie said, looking to her sister. Princeton is $33,000 a year, Annie said.
He should be able to get almost enough aid to cover it, Lizzie said, looking meaningfully at her older sister.
We can't make any decision, Nathaniel, until we work out the logistics of the financing, Annie responded quietly. Lizzie, you had better get going. You know Mom and her 6 on the dot supper hour. Lizzie took the hint.
Walk me to the car, she said, taking her sister's arm.
Don't even offer, Annie said softly as they finally stood by the Porsche.
Let me make up the difference between the aid and the scholarship, Lizzie said. We can wait till he has all the aid packages.
I can ante up $5,000 a year, but no more, Annie told her sister. If he gets 10 more in aid, it's still not enough, and he's going to need pocket money.
He'll get an on-campus job, Lizzie said.
Look, my firm gives scholarship aid to partners and employees' kids with good grades. Nathaniel has very good grades, and helping a kid at Princeton is just up our corporate alley. Don't be so proud, Annie, that you deny your oldest son his dream school. You know damned well that if Nat were alive, he would move heaven and earth to make it happen for his oldest son.
Annie was silent, and then she finally said, Okay. But only because I don't think Amy will go anyplace expensive. God, Lizzie, I really owe you big time.
Lizzie Bradford hugged Annie.
Family is everything, she said. Even a cold-ass corporate bitch like me knows that.
She slid into the driver's seat of her car.
I'll call you in a few days.
And then she was gone. And suddenly, life was smooth for Annie and her family. Her sister's firm came up with $10,000 in scholarship money for Nathaniel's first year at Princeton, renewable as long as he kept his grades up. And the guidance counselor at the high school worked with her son so that when...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?